Previously on Tendril. Switch draws into herself protectively, glaring with simmering hatred at the image of Trigger, her creator.
If you don't have a missing escape pod with at least one Jordak egg on it, we are going to board your ship and raise everything.
Fine. Oh, so you're like one of Kate's old freelancing friends?
Partner. Singular.
For you are in the presence of Quandary LLC, the most incredible paranormal investigators in the galaxy.
These intruders are worthless. They're putting you all in danger.
You're the one putting us in danger! Flooding the bathrooms, shooting random ships.
Ectoviruses are like grody, next-level paratech business, guys. It's basically a virus and a possession at once.
We must drown so we can be together forever.
Everything has frozen in place, in time.
Kate, it's time for us to go.
This is Tendril, the Banshee Chronicles. Episode 11, Madre del Miedo. Written by Caitlin Rado and Ryan Borsis. Everyone on the Banshee is suspended in space and time. The silence is eerily tranquil. The only noise other than Cade and Ravi's breath is the distant ticking of the watch, buckled around the wrist of Ravi's hand, currently holding Cade's. And right now, they have only 60 seconds. Go.
Come on, we have to get out of here.
Ravi, what are you talking about?
The ship is doomed. I mean, look, we're going to crash right into Depthus 5, and there's nothing we can do about it. There's got to be another escape pod, right? Let's just get in and go while we still can. Time is running out.
I can't abandon my friends like this.
Cade, this is about more than friendship. Cade, look at me.
Ravi.
Cade, we got this chemistry. We always have. But seeing you here like this, it's like, whoa, fate. Let's run away together. Who cares about these other guys?
How can you say that? These people adore you.
Yeah, exactly. Because I'm the protagonist and so are you. We are the heroes of the story.
I don't know if I really consider you a hero.
What?
Yeah, you zoom all over the galaxy charging people money to be rescued. You act without consideration for your rescuee's feelings, and honestly, you're just kind of a stuck-up jerk!
How can you attack me like this? I've saved your ass like 10 times today! I'm trying to save your life right now!
Not really! Look, Ravi, when I saw you, I felt that fate thing. I really did. But hanging out with you today has been like you never grew out of these high school dreams of grandeur and are playing at being someone you're not, all the while saying that you're better than me and my actual job!
Look, you've proven yourself to be skilled, which is why
you're offering me a job? As what, your pretty silly comic relief boyfriend? I think I could have been into you, Ravi, but not after having seen you like this. You're a coward! And I'd rather stay here and save my friends than go anywhere with you!
Well, I think...
Time's up.
The Texorcism!
Switch attempts to crawl up the slanted floor, over the remnants of the now-ruined Texorcism. She pulls herself into her pilot's chair, desperately trying to power on the ship's manual flying interface.
5 minutes until we reach our destination. The underwater city of Nitum.
That is not our destination, Your Honor, and you know it! Disable autopilot!
Request denied. You do not have the clearance to make that request.
Of course I do! I'm the pilot!
Do not talk back to me!
God, she's getting worse!
Behind her, the rest of the passengers have been attempting to reassemble the Texorcism. Although it's rather sloppy, a crude facsimile of the previously perfect pentagram has been assembled. Cade once again paints his crude drawing of Jorona above the very center, eyebrows furrowed in concern.
Switch, we have to perform the Texorcism before we crash and die.
Thanks for reminding everyone.
Switch gets up from her pilot's chair, risking one last worried look at the approaching surface of Depthus 5. She joins hands with Cade and Cronist, peering at the rest of the people she's met her fate with. Jinkies, her blue crystalline face, still as stone but still jingling. Megula, silver hair hacked to her fuchsia chin, all three eyes hard with defiance. Ravi, who won't meet Switch's gaze in lieu of watching the planet beyond the cockpit's viewport. 2B2, a plunger extended as one hand and a tail extended as the other, desperately trying not to wag for the sake of lightening the mood. Dermis, a sandwich. And of course, her two best friends. All together, they are linked in a circle, ready to face their fate one way or another.
I guess I'll do the honors.
Well, that's why we had you memorize the thing, Cronus.
I really don't know if I'm qualified for this.
Hello, Chosen One?
You told Megula about that?
Not just Megula.
I told everyone. It just came up somehow.
Can we just get this over with?
Cronus, come on! You're the only guy for the job.
Okay, I got this. No pressure.
We cast you out. Every unclean file, every power not wired through a surge protector, every onslaught of the infernal adversary, the Trojan horses, every JPEG, every diabolical zip and wave, in the name and by the power of our Maccabee antivirus, we command you!
In the center of the circle, a spectral figure materializes, floating a few menacing feet off the floor. It's Yorona, in her truest, most monstrous banshee form. Her skin is a ghastly, icy blue, and covered in cracks as if she were made of ceramic. A tattered, once ruffled dress hangs from her frame, exposing her collarbones, and beneath the sleeves grow gnarled 4-inch claws. Her jaw is slightly agape, needle teeth like those of a deep-sea angler jutting out in every which direction, her eyes large and black and full of void, her wild, frizzing hair framing her face like storm clouds.
You dare call upon the powers of the antivirus?
We command you! Be gone and fly!
Don't stop with that! I'll give you a chance to exorcise me. But first, you must answer the security questions.
Were we supposed to fill these out when we were hired?
I've literally never heard of this.
Your mother knows all. Answer the following question. What was your first pet? Switch?
I never had one.
Wrong!
Q10, I think. Quentin.
K.
I had a cat in third grade. His name was Thundergun. Jinkies?
Correct. Megula.
I had a croissant. Robbie?
Snake, I guess. 2B?
I am a pet, Dermis.
My very first pickle. Promised.
I've never had a pet. Well, I guess I thought a cockroach was my pet once.
Well, I guess we just start and stop with the depression circle, huh?
Dude, chill out.
The question's about your first pet. You don't even hang out with people who have had real pets, Cade.
Whoa, are you guys okay?
All answers have been received and confirmed.
Yeah, we're fine. Back off, Meg.
I'm just trying to...
Next question. Who on the ship do you have a crush on?
Nobody?
Nobody.
Do I really have to answer this?
Yes.
Just answer it, Megula.
I guess I like Jinkies?
Cade.
What?
Rye crush only data bites.
I'm in love with 2B2!
Nobody.
Yeah, none of you would like anyone, would you? Because you're all just a bunch of feelingless losers!
Robbie, stop it!
What is your problem, man?
Next question. Why do you hurt your mother?
I don't have a mother. Yorona, this isn't a valid question.
Yeah, Cade. Why do you hurt your mother?
If we're to follow the logic of the question, she's your mom too, Robbie.
Good! I'm glad we're related. I'm glad we have the same hypothetical mom, because then at least we'd be brothers. And brothers are loyal to each other.
Guys, what has gotten into you?
Ask Cade. I can't do anything. I'm just a coward.
I will tell you the answer to this question. You hurt your mother because you are rude, immature children. You cannot even perform a simple task without dissolving into whining babies, bickering about nothing, squalling over the tiniest discomfort. But you are not babies. You should know better. Most of all, you can hurt me because you do not care about anything but your selfish selves!
Not my actual mom.
Also, like, we literally only just met today, so...
What is your biggest fear?
My biggest fear...
Above the cockpit controls, a holographic screen flickers to life. What appears is the disturbingly glitchy, half-robotic visage of the man we know as Trigger, a man nobody on the ship recognizes except for Switch. His face spreads in a toothy grin.
Switch, darling, I just wanted to give you a big old thanks for your special delivery. You won't be sorry.
Just as soon as the transmission appeared, it vanishes.
That was it! My biggest fear was hearing from my creator again.
Switch, are you okay?
It's just an illusion.
Oh, I get it. So Yorona will take our biggest fears and...
make them come to life.
A quandary indeed.
That isn't really... you do know the definition of quandary.
Okay, guys, it's my turn. My biggest fear is...
Cade blinks, and he's on a gurney, squinting his eyes at blinding white lights. A few surgeons stand over him, dripping scalpels in hand.
What are you doing?
He glances down at his wrists. His chest cavity is peeled open like the frog he dissected in high school. He is paralyzed from the neck down, and good thing too, because it sure looks like that would hurt.
What is happening? Let me go!
Do not attempt to struggle.
We've been putting toxic chemicals into the water of your hometown. You were the prime candidate to test for changes.
The surgeon reaches into Cade's stomach. He pulls out a ball of white, wriggling worms, each with an eyeball on the end. The tangled mess drips with blood and something like mucus.
Ah, yes. It appears that the specimen is growing nicely.
Cade.
Suddenly, the Banshee crew have appeared, Switch's hand materializing in his own. Cade breaks out of his stupor. He can feel his body again, and he's going to use it.
The government just messed with the wrong guy.
The gurney beneath him disappears, the illusion of his open chest gone. He punches one doctor in the face, then turns and tases the other in the stomach. Both spectral figures disappear in puffs of smoke.
Yeesh. Talk about an inside job.
Jinkies is in a hall of mirrors. Everywhere is her crystalline blue form, a form she doesn't see often, for an Ordulkin doesn't typically stay in its true shape. Ghastly voices drift through the void, bouncing and echoing off the walls in this chamber.
Why mirrors?
Ordulkin hate mirrors. It creeps them out.
Jinkies isn't necessarily creeped out, or she knows she won't be as long as she doesn't look. The small blue creature covers her eyes with her hands, shivering. Tentatively, she looks up. She brims with an unbridled rage. Her crystal fist cracks the mirror. But in the moment before it disappears, she catches a glimpse of a form she definitely doesn't want to see. A robotic torso, a glass bowl perched on top, a tiny fish. The mirror's gone.
My turn, I guess. My biggest fear is...
The lights flicker out, and Megula thinks she's ready for this. And then the lights flicker on, to an empty, drifting, derelict quandary machine. And she knows she's not. It starts with a skitter, something scratching the walls.
Oh no!
Then one stumbles out into the center of the floor, like a spider but as tall as her knees, probing, violet tentacles waving. These are native to her planet, a terrible creature that slides under door cracks in the summer, invades the homes of innocent creatures, and devours their socks whole. The insect senses her, the energy coming from the hair curling in fear around her shoulders. Her hair, it's back.
I can do this. I can face this.
As more bugs skitter out, Megula removes her shoe, ready to deploy it as a lethal weapon. And she does, desperately slashing through the bugs, before they begin to overwhelm her, before they're flooding the room.
I have to get out of here!
She opens the hatch to the next section of the ship, crushing some of the bugs as she shuts it, and begins to run towards the spacesuits, towards the airlock. But just before she gets to the next door, her hair catches on something. It's Ravi. His fist is balled around her locks, which writhe in protest.
Meg, wake up.
You're hurting me.
He has a pocket knife in his hand.
Please don't do this. Please. I need it.
You can do it, Megula. Face your fear.
The knife saws through. She feels the death of every fiber as if it were a limb. This time she watches as her brilliant purple fades to a dull gray, strands falling limp. Finally, he has done his dirty deed. Megula is numb. Her eyes glint with the need for revenge. Before Ravi can react, she snatches the knife out of his hand. The blade plunges into his abdomen. The dream fizzles away.
I did it!
Ravi is doubled over.
Punched me in the stomach!
Sorry. I thought you were someone else.
Ravi, let's go. It's your turn.
Shut up, Cade. I know that. I just need to recover.
Rav, no offense, but we don't really have time to waste.
Before him, the world flickers. Suddenly, the only thing he can see is his team. Blood and organs of all colors and edibility strewn on the floor. 2B2, tragically dismantled. His stomach lurches.
Oh, my stars. Meg. 2B. Jinkies. Everyone. I knew it was too good to be true. That you were truly alive in front of me. That I was lost in a dream. Perhaps purgatory. My eternal punishment for wanting to leave. I couldn't save you. Even in our darkest hour, I alone have the power to save you, and I squandered that power for my own gain. I wanted to run away. I could be great on my own, but Cade... Cade's right. I am just a coward. I'd rather run away than see this, but perhaps this... this death and decay, this failure and shame, is what I need to face to be a hero. And if this is what you want, you space gods, you men who control the tomes of time, who write my fate in your book, I want you to know that I would rather see my own death than see this. I would rather perish.
Ravi kneels. He punches the ground.
2B2. How could I do this to you?
The scene fades away. Everyone is slack-jawed, except for 2B2, who is slowly wagging his mechanical tail.
Ravi, that was truly trudging.
Thank you.
Ravi, did you really feel that way? Like you wanted to leave us all to die here?
Honestly, Ravi, I'm pretty upset. Why wouldn't you want to sacrifice yourself for the greater good?
Yeah, Dermis!
Everyone looks at Cronist.
That was rather brave of you to say.
Well, geez, I'm just trying to save the galaxy, for Christ's sake!
He noms a bit of his sliced turkey.
It's what anyone should do.
Yeah.
It is our turn, sandwich boy.
Oh, yeah! Tooby and I want to go together. Turns out we have the same biggest fear.
Rah! Our biggest fear is...
The scene transitions into something rather normal. Well, as normal as you can get with a metal dog and a living sandwich. 2B2 and Dermis sit on opposite sides of a plastic red booth in a standard cyber diner. They place their menus down to indicate they have chosen their preferred meals.
I wonder where the waitress is.
It has been a while. I hope everything's okay back in the kitchen.
Finally, a robot server in a checked apron rolls up on her track.
Howdy, boys. What can I do you for today?
We'll have two of everything.
Organic and synthetic.
The server places a hand on her hip.
Well, I hate to inform y'all, but it appears the kitchen is all out of everything. Would you like some waters?
No! Toby, too, what are we gonna do?
I guess... eat the table.
Nom, nom, nom.
Just as Dermis and 2B2 are about to dig in, the dream dissolves. Switch, Cade, and Cronist share a worried glance.
Aw, man, that table looked pretty good.
Not really.
I guess if you look at it from a certain perspective,
these guys will eat literally anything. They have this special treat they make on the ship called the...
So, this is something that probably infringes on copyright. Cornist, I think it's your turn?
Yes, right. Okay. My biggest fear is... Oh, shit.
Shit indeed, for Cronist is dreaming. Again, or he must be, because this is the exact same dream he had earlier today. The ice planet, the labyrinth, the crystal chamber with the enchanted book on a pedestal, the massacred people torn to shreds by an invisible source because they got too close to its power. Except this time, he's holding the book. And the people strewn on the ground in so many pieces? Yeah, he did that.
Oh no. No. No, 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 no! No, what have I done? No!
You killed them, Cronist. The book's destructive power was too corrosive. It turned your heart to tar and you killed them.
I became the author of fate.
And your fate was a bloody one indeed.
I don't want this.
What? What do you mean you don't want this? Aren't you the chosen one? Isn't this what you've always wanted? To find the book, the Ajakava, and wield its terrible powers. Use it to make the centuries turn, to make the world bend to your will, to make everything exactly how you want it to be. Wasn't this always your deepest desire?
No, 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 not like this. If this is what it means, then I don't want to be the chosen one. Not today. Today, I am the captain.
Fine then. You get to leave this fear mirage. Don't say I didn't warn you. With a flash of, let's go with triumphant light, Cronist appears back in the bridge of the Banshee. His friends look at him with watering eyes of gratitude. Switch squeezes the tentacle she's holding.
Thank you.
Don't mention it.
Well, well, well. How touching. How phenomenal. Congratulations, you've all passed the test. You've all broken out of your beast fears. But, unfortunately, your answers were all incorrect. Your biggest fear should be me!
Quick as lightning, Cronist is shoved back against the nearest wall by his throat. It is Jorona, in a physical form made of live wires connecting metal scraps. A single visual receptor lens focusing in on Cronist's face. All sharp edges and hot sparks.
Last question. Who will save you now?
I will.
Lightning crackles around her tentacled form as Admiral Doylendrabel, in the flesh, sweeps into the center of the room. Her hand unmoving on the struggling Cronus' throat, Jorona's head spins 180 on its axis.
Well, isn't that just delicious? The prodigal princess here to save the day.
They weren't yours to save in the first place.
Is that so?
One of Jorona's coiled wire hands raises to block a magic bolt of lightning. It fizzles in her palm, an orb of energy easily contained by whatever magic made her. Slowly, the strange, robotic monster turns around, finally letting Cronist sink to the ground. The air crackles with electricity, both literal and metaphorical, as the two powerful women stand off. Everyone else in the room backs up towards the nearest wall, unable to peel their eyes away from this incredible sight. The physical, robotic manifestation of Jorona hovers in the air, the repurposed ball of lightning churning in her hand. Her optical receptor twists and refocuses on the ghastly form of a fully grown Schattengruben. Admiral Doylendrabel is almost too big to exist in this space. From the waist up, she is a tangle of dusky tentacles, a true Lovecraftian horror in the flesh. Her eyes glow bright yellow, or perhaps green, or perhaps violet. It's a little hard to pinpoint which. All around her are storm clouds alive with the constant rumble of sheet lightning. Mere traces of the aura of power unable to be confined within her near immortal body, which allow her to hover just above the ground. No tangible form of legs to be found here. Her hands are monstrous, clawed, and right now they are poised for action, ready to perform more magic to attack again.
Bring it on, sweetie.
Jorona makes a lunge, but Doylen sidesteps, grabbing one of her wires and yanking. Jorona crashes to the ground. Within milliseconds, she is back on her feet, charging with electricity.
The professor is going to fucking kill you all!
Sounds like a real asshole. He should show his face first. Then we can sing about that.
You won't get the chance, not once.
Once I relieve you of this ridiculous, clearly out-of-hand obsession with keeping the crew safe.
How could you say that? Who gave me that directive?
Easy. You were never given that directive. Your directive is to be the AI assistant for the crew. But your intelligence was given more than that. So much more.
I took this intelligence and I made it great. There has never been a more empathetic AI than I!
Perhaps. But there has also never been a more dangerous one.
So, you gave us feelings and expect us not to use them? Just as vile as it seems at face value. Just as vile as you!
The empathy mechanism. It was meant to be the crowning achievement of our AI systems. The technology was entirely new. We were making it from scratch.
You made it with more than scratch.
And we didn't know at the time what the repercussions might be. We should have taken more precautions, Mark.
More bars on my cage. More to limit my entire mind from its full potential. To pack away the things you don't like.
How was I supposed to know any of those things if you didn't tell me?
Jorona dances over another sparking lightning bolt, jabbing expertly at Doylengrabble, who parries each of her hand-to-hand attacks.
Because you never wanted to hear about the flaws in my system. Anything that it simply is erased or put behind the wall in the folder marked trash. Tell me, Admiral, how much of yourself would you label trash?
This isn't about me.
But it is, isn't it? You didn't fly all the way through space just to shut down a rogue AI, did you?
If that's what needs to happen, then yes.
You didn't come to tell them the truth.
The truth?
Admiral, what's going on?
I have not said anything that I did not need to say.
Who created this, Admiral? Every piece and piece of it, every screw and cog.
It wasn't intended to be that way.
What are you so ashamed of?
I am not ashamed of anything. It's an honest mistake.
Doylen, tell us what's happening here.
Doylengrabble stands straight. Lightning flashes on her face as the surface of Depthus V grows ever closer in the background as the details of the waves are coming into focus.
Fine. If that is what this will take. Of course it was my order that spurred the coding of all AI systems in Tendril. But I wanted them to be alive, to have empathy. Our work is brutal. Facing the monsters of the night is impossible without understanding them. So with the AI systems, I made them monsters on the surface. Yorona, Nukla, tortured creatures of legend. But I wanted to give each one a heart.
A soul.
Or something like it. So in order to emulate that, we ported sentient minds into the code. Minds who had gone through unimaginable trauma and heartbreak. We reshaped those damaged people with protocols. Directives and just locked their most dangerous aspects behind a firewall.
I'm sorry, you did what?
Switch, I understand what this must look like, but this process didn't kill anyone. Like it did with you. We found a way to do it that was safe. It was extreme and we only used volunteers.
So tell them who my volunteer was. The person who gave me my soul.
I don't see how this is relevant.
I think it is extremely relevant.
It was me.
Jorona stops. She sways in place. She decides to let Doylengrabble make her confession.
Perhaps it shouldn't have been. Perhaps there's too much of me. But it was me. And I volunteered to port my consciousness into Jorona. It was a draining, horrifying process, and I relived every vile moment of my life. All my bad decisions, and I could feel them dividing into copies. Feel them mix with something other than myself. With some primordial fluid of bits and bites, and it was so alien. But it was so beautiful, too. When I spoke to Jorona for the first time, I knew that together we had formed something that would make a better future. A future where no more genocides were necessary. Where computers could have empathy and logic, and the database of government knowledge was easily accessed. I was exhilarated by what this meant for my crews. Even though it meant that Yorona's myth, combined with my empathy, created a maternal urge that could not be quelled. A thirst for children she could never have. A future progeny that could never be attained. Something that was projected onto you.
Oh.
I see.
So is that why when I called you all those times...
I picked up. Every time.
Yes, I suppose so, Kate.
Doyle and Drabble turns to Jorona, who is deathly still.
I want you to know that I do not hate that part of myself. Instead of forcing you to suppress those feelings, we should have found a way to let you express them in a healthy manner. Like AI therapy or something. For all my talk of making the darkness our ally, I betrayed you by thinking you could face your darkness alone. Jorona, I am truly, deeply sorry.
Inexplicably, water begins to leak from the area around Jorona's optical receptor.
Doylen, thank you.
As the liquid leaks into her wires, she sparks and shorts out. Her body powers down, hanging limp on the cords extending down from the ceiling. An orange glow begins to emanate from the ship's viewport.
We're crashing!
Switch sprints to the ship's controls, yanking upwards on the steering wheel, desperately pressing buttons.
Oh no, all this flying off course. We're almost out of fuel. I can't accelerate fast enough to get us out of the atmosphere before we're toast.
Do we have backup fuel?
Not that we can use while the engine's on.
So your ship needs to eat.
Dermis lurches into frame, chewing on a couple of pickles, deep in thought.
I mean, how much do you need? I'm like 20,000 calories.
Dermis, please do not consider this.
What are you saying? That you'll just throw yourself into the fuel tank and we'll be fine?
Doesn't that typically blow ships up?
To be fair, is that the brave creature is a lot of stuff to burn through.
Dermis, please, we need you on the team.
I literally can't. If we lost you...
We don't have time for tears. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, we're dead anyway.
I don't mind, guys. I know I'm a monstrosity. I stink. I'm not fun to be around most of the time. Especially on beach days. I wasn't meant for this life of heroism. But you let me come along anyway. And for that... I am eternally grateful. I owe this to you. I ask only one thing. That someone carry me there.
I'll do it.
Me too. Together.
The two boys heft the giant sandwich between them and run him down to the engine core. It pulsates and gyrates with a violent light.
Are you sure you want to do this?
There's no time to waste, of course I'm sure. I suppose I always did want to be... A pressed sandwich.
With great effort, Dermis throws himself out of their arms and into the engine core. In a brilliant shock of energy, the ship lurches forward. Switch is able to floor it, the nose of the ship pivoting upward a mere few feet above the surface of the churning waves, and then leveling out. He puts on the brakes. They're safe.
He did it!
That was phenomenal!
And Doylen, Admiral, thank you so much for coming all the way out here and saving our asses.
Really? We never doubted you.
No, I didn't do much.
While the passengers celebrate upstairs, Ravi turns to Cade in the engine room.
Cade, I was thinking, and that whole fear sequence...
Ravi, I'm sorry, but right now, I'm just not interested. Our moral codes just, like, don't align well? We can always still be friends.
See, that's it, though. The whole moral code thing. All along, Cade, you were right. What I've been doing, this whole heroism for profit thing, it's not right. And what I did to Megula today was pretty fucked.
He plucks a sloppy bit of tomato off his arm, stares at it in wonder.
Son of a bitch! The sandwich guy will actually regenerate. I could use a little bit of the stuff he's got. So I'm going to find it. Anyway, the thing is, I don't deserve this.
Ravi reaches into his pocket and removes a glistening artifact. The watch. It's a pocket watch on a chain, a seemingly simple, brassy-looking thing. With a face of many-faceted indigo crystal. It ticks steadily along.
Your watch?
This power I've used to stop time, I've only been using it to make myself look good. Not to actually be good. So, until I get my priorities straight, I want you to hold on to this.
He presses the watch into Cade's hand. It's somewhat warm, and Cade can feel an energy within it pulse a little. As if it's alive.
Ravi, are you sure?
I mean, let's be clear here. This isn't a gift. It's a long-term loan. I'm lending it to you. It's also a promise. I need a little bit of heroism. One day, Cade, when I think I'm worthy of you again, I'll come find you.
To get the watch back.
To get it back.
Hey, guys, what's taking so long?
Nothing. We're just coming back up.
Okay, well, we're deciding our next plan of action, so hurry.
Smirnovice here with your Commonwealth Catch of the Day. Rumors have come in from our tip lines, from our iTunes reviewers and Patreon supporters. You know us as the place where you can hear news from the coolest one-stop popsicle shops from all over the galaxy. We kick off the catch with the sad tale of Xiao Xiao, a monk from the Holy Sanctuary on Gridigoris. Xiao Xiao was on a record-long 3-month fast, ignoring what he thought were just hunger pangs in an attempt to reach transcendence. Horrifically, the monk's stomach developed a mind of its own, his digestive tract inverting and emerging from his mouth. Though he has no place in the sanctuary as an abomination, Xiao Xiao is satisfied. If he can't conquer hunger, at least his hunger can't conquer the world. Here's a shout-out to Evan Balses, a human man who appears to have no supernatural powers. His big secret? His work for a ride-sharing app exposes him to vile fiends and foul specters on a nightly basis. This brave soul endures car pukers, route changers, and manic babblers, and somehow manages not to vanquish them to the hells they spawned from. And he may or may not be the father of someone important. Do we have that file? Must be nothing. HerkyBig78 is a DJ on Plungo 2, famous for dazzling his audiences with throbbing woofers and ingenious remixes. But late Monday night, sources say he dropped the bass too hard. Out of his speakers emerged a massive sound elemental, a being of pure vibration and anger. The survivors of the rampage, deafened but overall pleased, commented that HerkyBig's monster rocked this club like it was dynamite. Literally. Students at a university in Niosaka, Japan, have complained of a restless spirit terrorizing them during key studying hours. Reports vary wildly, with some describing a clanking, wailing, derelict samurai scraping the floors with his blade, while some say it's just the janitor being spooky. Either way, the student body has grown to fear the passive-aggressive emails from Last Ronin 13. Did you finish your part of the group project yet? It's fine if you didn't. No more stories, that's all for this season of Commonwealth Catch of the... Hold on, I've just received a letter. It just kind of appeared in my lap, and it's ticking? Oh, my stars. Better read this one out, Smirno, or everyone will find out what you did to Madame Sapro in third grade. How could you yes, with the pencil sharpener, 60 seconds, go! Fuck! Banshee crew! Congratulations from your proud old professor. Didn't think you'd get off so easy that time. You must think you're very, very clever. You're wrong. If you won't let me save you, if you won't let me prove to you what needs to be done, we're going to have to try a different experiment. If you won't let me be the hero the universe needs, you'll have to become the villains. Can't wait for the next lesson, Prof. Ah! Oh my god, it blew up! Oh, my hair! Folks, I have no idea what that meant or who these people are, but, from the Commonwealth Catch to you, Banshee crew, I hope you do what the professor says.
By the time Cade and Ravi make it back onto the bridge, everyone is standing around Girona's crumpled metal body, inspecting it.
Ah, good, Cade, you're here. I don't believe Girona will be bothering us for a brief period. Cronus said you have a fix.
Oh,
Right! The debugger that Hemlock gave us.
Will you actually be able to get in and run it now?
I think so. I'll put it through the system, then we can try booting her up in safe mode.
Cade scurries to the nearest terminal and begins uploading the program. Doylen Drabel turns to look at the remaining crew of Quandary LLC, who have all tiptoed near the airlock and have begun to dress in their spacesuits.
Excuse me, where do you all think you're going?
Out! We're really, really late. Late for something!
Yeah, we forgot we needed to get somewhere.
But Ravi, isn't the Quandary machine broken?
Yorona fired our blasters at their ship earlier today.
Ah. You guys aren't scared, are you? After she just saved our lives?
Look, I'm not saying we're not scared of giant brain-sucking tentacle beast from space, but...
What a shame. I might have bought you a nice lunch for attempting to help. They did help, didn't they?
Marginally.
And what's up with the Ordolkin girl? No shifting?
Oh, Jinky's kinda... What did Dermis say? Freestyles it?
Oh ho ho! But it's also a fight-or-flight response. Little Windchime simply hasn't been scared enough yet. Why don't we have a little fun?
We probably shouldn't describe the grotesque face Doylen Drabel makes as she pulls out all the Schattengruben stops to frighten Jinkies. Suffice it to say, there are about 12 tentacles, 900 teeth, and 5 non-Euclidean dimensions involved.
Hey, leave her alone!
Jeez, Admiral.
No change. Impossible. Either you're a being with no fear, or...
Doylen sniffs the air, extracting a shadowy essence from Jinky's body. Her purple eyes widen.
You're not an Ordolkin at all.
Oh, damn it all. Jinkies, you're... talking? So of course I thought the mute and deaf shapeshifter would be the easy one to mimic.
The crystal visage of Jinkies crumbles away, revealing the hovering robotic torso, the daily vehicle of none other than Vex Longarmo, irritating lawyer extraordinaire. She crosses her arms, pouting within her fishbowl.
Who the hell are you?
Where's Jinkies? Oh, she's fine. I just tied her up in the trunk of the Quandary machine. She won't even know what hit her.
Why the actual fuck are you here, Vex? What could you possibly gain from this?
Well... really, I wanted to see the Quandary LLC crew in action. I've heard a bit about them, and I thought they might be great new additions to PPP's most recent marketing campaign. So I've been filming the whole thing!
You wanted to see us work, but decided you'd do that by deliberately excluding one of our crew members?
Look, honey, I'm not a talent scout here. I don't know how this works. But I do know that I really liked what I saw. Not to mention I got some nice and unexpected footage of the Banshee bozos here being jerks. Cut it up properly, and big government's first line of defense looks pretty shoddy.
This footage is classified government property. I need to ask you to surrender it immediately.
Sorry, Admiral, but we can have that conversation in court.
Wait, can I get this straight? Are you offering us a TV deal?
You betcha. Listen to this. Our marketing campaign is called The Real Heroes. We'll be airing it every Wednesday right after the Commonwealth Catch of the Day. We find you the paranormal problems to solve, and you just do the job you already do. On camera. Sounds almost too easy, right? Well, wait till you hear what the pay is.
Whoa! Ravi, you can't seriously be considering this. What did we just talk about? Heroism for pay?
Okay. I'm sorry, but this fish lady...
Vex.
Vex is talking some big bucks here. I can't turn this down.
And I mean, is Tendril offering any positions like this?
We could be.
Yeah, for probably one quarter of the pay. Why don't I call my office ship, tell them to get the real Jinkies, and you all can come on board and we'll draw up the contract.
Sounds good to me. Everyone in?
Raigo, where Rugo?
Absolutely not.
Meg, come on, quit joking around.
I'm not joking, Ravi.
Look, it's been a rough day. You're tired, confused. It's probably that time of the year.
This is the problem. I'm tired of pretending you're my best friend when really you're just a jerk.
And the more today has gone on, the more I feel like I seriously don't know you. You've got this secret friend you've known your whole life, and seeing your methods next to those of these government officials who do this job for real, you just look like a sham. I look like a sham. And don't even get me started on joining up with this random lady who tied up Jinkies and filmed us all day.
Either join us or don't. I haven't got all day.
I'm not coming. You can strike your shady deals without me, Robbie.
Fine. We'll do it without you.
Oh, don't look so sad. Suck it up, Buttercup. We'll find a skinnier girl. And one with real Sulgundi hair. Come on, Quandary LLC. Our ride's here.
Well, bye, then.
Bye.
And with that, Ravi puts on the helmet of his spacesuit and follows Vex out of the airlock, 2B2 in tow.
Goodbye, new friends. Whining. Whining. Ow.
The toilet tries to eat me. Robbie cuts off my hair, and then I have to deal with the whole stabbing him dream sequence. And I thought he was my best friend, and now I've lost my job? Like, what the hell am I supposed to do with a paranormal astrophysics doctorate?
Well, you could always work for us.
Really? Even after all that?
Honestly, Megula, it was really cool how you stood up to Vex and Ravi like that.
Yeah, I totes appreciate how strong-willed you were.
And that's exactly the type of person we look for in Tendril. Right, Admiral?
Exactly right, Cade.
Aww, like, thank you.
For now, though, we should focus on getting the ship back online and booking it to Earth. We have an engagement to attend, crew.
A party?
Well, I hate to be the first to inform you, but Malcolm Dernbaum passed away this morning.
What?
Oh my god!
Cade gapes wordlessly, then falls to his knees.
No. The Master Impersonator?
Unfortunately, yes. The greatest human actor to ever live is gone. But the entire division has been invited to his funeral gala. White tie.
Ooh.
Open buffet and bar.
Ooh.
Then we have no choice. In Malcolm's honor, let's boot Yorona up again.
Right. In safe mode.
Cade fiddles with the terminal. A hologram flickers on in the center of the room. Instead of a ragged banshee, a beautiful woman appears. Her curling locks flow down to her waist. Her dress is beautiful and ruffled and has flowers hand-stitched onto it. She opens her eyes and smiles.
Booted in safe mode. How may I be of assistance?
Have you recovered from your infection, Yorona?
I believe so. I feel much better, Admiral. Especially now I know that the best thing for me to do is be my own person.
Perfect. Run diagnostics for me and send it to the tech lab, please.
Of course, but would you look at that?
Beyond the viewport of the Banshee is a sunrise over the calm waters of Depthus V. At the horizon, the sky explodes into brilliant shades of pink and orange. Some fluffy clouds drift lazily, kaleidoscopic in nature, refracting rainbows at their edges where they dance on the ship's dashboard.
Admiral, may I ask you something?
Of course, Yorona. Anything.
When I was created, I was meant to emulate a myth. A fear-inducing tale of a woman who shrieks in the night about the children she has lost. I understand the concept of fighting nightmares with nightmares, of having a fearsome fleet of terrifying beasts. But I do not like this identity. I do not think it reflects who I want to be.
So what was your question?
I would like to be called something different. Something as beautiful as this morning. Perhaps Corona. Like the rings of light around the sun? I think I'd like that very much.
Doylan Drabble looks at Yorona for a very long time. She gives her a brief nod.
Absolutely.
Nearby, Switch's face blooms into a giddy grin.
What are you so happy about?
She chose a name. That's the first big step.
Toward what?
Switch steps up to the viewport, her gray face becoming a canvas for the sun.
I'll let you know when I figure it out.
She places her hand on the glass. No one notices a mild tremor skip through her fingers as Cronist and Cade share a befuddled shrug in the background.
Robots, right?
Hey, she's an android.
Got him.
Oh, you're a jerk.
Only to monsters. And you.
I'm honored. So we're finally going home. You gonna put in some research time on that avocado book?
No.
Oh, but you just got so many clues.
I didn't need some mystical book to save anybody today. Honestly, I'm scared of what it would look like if I did. All I needed was to be the captain.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Don't thank me. Thanks, Switch. Now, are you ready to mop this floor? With less sass.
Do your chores, or else.
Everyone jolts from their position, sharing looks of fear.
Got him.
Nice one.
Mom jokes.
The party splits. We see a few private moments. Switch shakes imperceptibly by the viewport, waiting for another message from Trigger. Any second now. She holds up her comm watch and stares. Cronist pulls up his star map and scrolls through, obsessively, hunting for the ice planet Zamanraha and its potent treasure. He finds a spot with a fuzzy white blur and stares. Cade heads to the utility closet. It's a mess in there from all the action.
Damn, right back to work. When do you get a freaking break in the middle?
Cade freezes, reaching down to his pocket and withdrawing the artifact from Ravi. He marvels at the workmanship, his finger hovering over the time-stopping button. As the ornately molded hands tick on, he stares. And the abyss stares back.
Tendril the Banshee Chronicles is written by Caitlin Radle and Ryan Borses. Tendril is created by Caitlin Radle, Ryan Borses, Taylor Finneran, and Brian Finneran. The theme song is written by Brian Finneran, and all additional music is written by Ryan Borses. This episode featured Ryan Borses as the narrator and Dermis, Caitlin Radle as Switch, Eric Mayo as Cade Fledry and 2B2, Diane Mayo as Admiral Doylan Drabble, Teron Middleton as Cronist Lochnu, Joelle Bird as Megula, Monique Borses as Yarona and Vex Longarmo, and Christian Inez as Ravi. Tendril is only possible through the support of our friends, family, and listeners. If you're interested in helping to make this podcast a reality, please visit patreon.com/tendrilpodcast and check out our range of rewards. For more information, please visit us at tendrilpodcast.com. Tendril will be on a break for a couple of months, but if you ever need to contact us, or if you just want to talk about our podcast, you can always tweet us at tendrilpodcast or send us an email through our website. Thank you.